This is Brock and Salk
from the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
All right, final hour here of Brock and Salk, 710 ESPN, Seattle, 710sports.com. If you get a chance, you can always check us out on our app, 710 Sports app. It's always driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealers. Hope you'll check that out. Really is an easy way to either live stream the show. You get highlights there. I love the highlight thing. So you can always, of course, listen to every minute of every show via on-demand podcast deal. But you can also just do highlights. So we take like good 4 or 5 minute clips, put them together, and you just kind of listen right through everything that's happened on the station, one right after another. So a really cool way to do it.
Put the Mariner game on there tomorrow so it doesn't have to be on that like Facebook?
Don't know that we have that ability.
Don't have that kind of juice yet.
Go download that 710 Sports app. It's a pretty cool deal. Man, I'll tell you, people are going to find their way to these Mariner games. They're finding ways to watch, to listen, to be there, etc. And as they should. 42-24, man. Just a joy to watch. Something different every single night.
42-24.
Isn't it crazy?
42-24.
It doesn't sound right.
I was saying to you before the show, like, seriously, we were all down there at spring training, and we saw a lot of other people. If you would have said the numbers 42-24, 24-42, like 90% of people, like, ooh, that's tough. They're going to have to just fire. So, well, you know, now Jerry's going to get to make all these moves. No, they're 42-24. They're 18 games over. There's only one team in baseball with more wins than them as we sit here right now.
So bizarre.
And John Morosi probably deserves a lot of the credit.
Yeah, he didn't pick them to go to the playoffs for the first time and said that that would be the reason they get to the World Series.
Right.
John, you're a genius.
Well, good morning, gentlemen. I guess we're a third of the way there, and you know how I feel about your city and the team. So it's great to follow the story at a distance. Of course, I get to see you guys this week, which will be great later on. But I would say I can't claim any credit here, but certainly it's been fun to follow as my prediction. Either my prediction or non-prediction is somewhat coming true.
What years, John, were you out here? You were with the Seattle PI, correct?
Oh, yes. I was at the PI for one season, the 05 season that was managed by Mike Hargrove. That was the year after Ichiro set the hits record. So the team wasn't all that good, but many great memories, and I got to cover Raul Ibanez, who has been a great friend of me ever since. So very, very lucky to be in Seattle for that season.
John, is this team the talk of the national baseball press?
Well, it's
just say
question.
No. We know the answer is no. Just say no.
Well, it's not the talk of the industry to right now, but I'll say this. I mean, I do a fair number of national interview spots every week, and the Mariners are now getting asked about it. It's maybe not the first topic, but they're like probably a solid third. They're creeping into the consciousness of I think the national sports conversation, which is great, and they should be.
And what is it you say?
The way they played.
Yeah.
What do I say? I say that it's still going to be hard to beat the Astros in that division, but that I'll say this: whichever team, as we see the division, I think in the American League there's such a clear hierarchy in comparison to the National League. We know, for example, that probably the wild card game will take place in New York or Boston. I think there's a pretty good chance it's going to happen. And you're going to have one of those two teams, based on the way that division looks, with the way that three of those teams are really not all that competitive, those two teams are going to build up their win totals to the point that one of them is probably a wild card team with 100 wins, and they're going to host the game, but they are not going to be happy to see James Paxton, potentially, if the Mariners can't win the division, James Paxton on the mound facing them. I think that's what it looks like right now. Listen, it is going to be a monumental task. The Mariners have played phenomenal baseball, and especially since Cano's been gone, which has been even more impressive. It's given the Astros, you look at their run differential, you look at the rotation they've got, they've been undermined a bit by a subpar bullpen, and their lineup hasn't quite been as consistent as it was last year. But that is still an absolutely dominant rotation that I think is going to be hard to overcome over 162. Yeah. The Mariners may still be able to do it, but even if they don't, they're in there with a really good chance to upset whichever team they play in the wild card game if they don't win the division. So I think the outlook overall, right now, I would take, especially given the uncertainty surrounding Ohtani, I would take the Mariners over the balance of this season over the Angels. And if that's good enough, then they're probably in the playoffs.
John Morosi with us here from the MLB Network. You're right. You're going to get to come here over the weekend and be a part of the broadcast. We'll get to see you Friday here in studio in person. John, as you look at this Mariners team, as you prep and get ready for this weekend, do they remind you of somebody else? you know, of all these years, and you put enough years of baseball kind of under your belt, and you see these different teams take shape and their personality or their play or how they're getting it done. Do they remind you of any team that you've covered or seen over the last few years?
It's a really good question too, Brock. I would say this, that I look at maybe comparing them to the 12 Orioles, who were able to get back to the playoffs for the first time in a long time, ending their drought in Baltimore, and largely on the strength of a really, really good bullpen. That was then able to, they had some ascendant young stars, which I think the Mariners have a really nice collection of position players. And of course, I guess 2 years later, Baltimore had Nelson Cruz as part of their lineup. And of course, so Nelly's been doing such great work for the Mariners, including last night with the two homers. But I think that, to me, the fact that the Mariners have gotten to where they are with Marco Gonzalez playing such a key role, and Wade LeBlanc, who is due to pitch our game, I know, on Saturday, based on the fact he pitched last night. These are guys that were somewhat unheralded, and certainly in the case of Wade, is bounced around a couple different times. Jerry DePoto's acquired him multiple times now. He is a great story. And so I think it does have that storybook quality to it. And with what Heredia has done, and you're bringing in Span, and I think D. Gordon, when you've got a player that's been an all-star like D has been, and now he's moving to second base, he's moving to a new position to help the team out, and then things go as well as they've gone, that really sends a really great vibe to the clubhouse. Well, when you've got a player who's been in the league as long as D has been, to very selflessly do that, to play second base, I think it really puts a lot of positivity there, and I think the way that they have played has been great. And certainly behind the plate, they've gotten more production than maybe they've gotten in years past. So there's just a lot of really nice stories. Healy had a big hit last night. It's one of those collective teams. And I think, too, to be honest, when the Mariners, this is not the 0-1 team by any stretch, obviously, but I think that was another team that was, and you got Ichiro having an MVP season as a rookie, but that team was always characterized by its collective strength as opposed to relying on one player. And I think that we're seeing a similar offense that's carrying the burden in the absence of Robinson Cano. And I guess we're going to see now, guys, once Robbie comes back, interesting comments from Jerry DePoto to Jerry Krasnick about how he's going to have to earn his time back at second base, which on one level sounds outrageous, but on one level makes a lot of sense because they're playing that well without him.
John Morosi joining us here on the Venue Kings Hotline, as he does every other Tuesday at 9 o'clock, and he'll be in studio with us on Friday, which is going to be a lot of fun. We had a caller earlier who was talking about something Brock and I have spent some time on, and you mentioned LeBlanc and Leak and Gonzalez. Those three surprises kind of being the reason the Mariners are where they are, if I have to point to something. And he was talking about Jerry really exploiting a market inefficiency, out moneyballing everyone in a way that we haven't really seen before. I mean, that the idea for the last few years, and maybe you've heard differently, is that the idea of the old sabermetrics are dead, and now it's all about these advanced stats with the spin rate and launch angles and exit velocity and all that stuff. But Jerry seems to have gone old school or sort of mid old school by saying, all right, there's a market inefficiency here. Everybody wants velocity. I'll take three guys who have zero velocity and see if we can win with them.
That's a great point. And I think that works if a couple of things are true. That would not work necessarily in a really small ballpark. And it would also not work unless you had good defense. And I think that you have to have those two things working in your favor. And I think Jerry knows that. Obviously, he's got a big ballpark. Still, while Safeco has become more offensive over time, it's still, I think, a good place to pitch. And the defense and really prioritizing that has been important. And I think it's the Mariners are still a very good defensive club. Maybe not the best, but still good. And I think that those are the two key things that have gone on there. And I think Jerry in general, I think a general comment on him, I mean, he has seen a lot in the game. I think people forget how long he played in the big leagues. He played for a number of different teams. He scouted. He won a World Series ring with the Red Sox as a scout. People forget about that. He has been an executive in multiple spots. He was a GM in Arizona on an interim basis. He was a GM in Anaheim, and that was obviously a very difficult at times circumstance. He had some good teams. He had a lot of drama that he had to kind of wade through. So while he still has a great young perspective about him, he has seen a lot. And I think he can thread that needle between the numbers and the scouting hardcore baseball stuff. There's not a lot of GMs in baseball now that played the game in the major leagues at all, period, and very few that have played it as long as Jerry has. I mean, you can count them on one hand. So I think he's got a very unique perspective. I think he's brought in He's brought in some new guys. He's kept some of Jack Z's guys. Yeah, he's a very thoughtful person that I think does a very good job of developing a consensus mindset by taking a lot of different opinions and really empowering the people around him. So I think he's done a very good job. I think that it's been a quietly building team from a standpoint of just arriving brick by brick and move by move. And just what's happened in the absence of Cano, to me, you talk about the Mariners being the talk of baseball, from a standpoint of organizational success, that is probably the talk of baseball.
They're 19-7. 19-7 since Robinson Cano got hurt. Well, so that's, and then the next question for me would be, is Scott Servais the manager of the year? And I know that if you're on the East Coast, you're going to say, well, the Red Sox and Yankees both have rookie managers, and so they're the two best teams in baseball. Obviously, Cora and Boone are going to be the... If you've gone 19-7 without Robinson Cano, and if they do end up making the playoffs for the first time in 17 years, will anyone even know who Scott Servais's name is to vote for him?
Well, I think so. And here's the thing. And yes, there is still maybe, you know this, Mike, there is still a certain East Coast, I don't know if I want to call it bias, but there's just a conscientiousness maybe about those teams when they're playing well, when especially they've got a first-year manager. But let's be clear about this. The Red Sox and Yankees both made the playoffs last year. And so I think, rightly or wrongly, the Manager of the Year award often is the he who does the most with the least award. And I'm not saying it should be the case, but it sort of is in many cases. The team is either surprisingly good or the manager who does the most with the least. And I think in those criteria, Scott Servais's job is outstanding. I think because you look at if the Astros make the playoffs, win the division, well, they were supposed to. The Indians win the division, they were supposed to. And the Red Sox and Yankees, while there may be that bias towards first-year managers winning 100 games, not a lot of them have done that in the history of the game, those are two really good rosters that were really good rosters last year and that made the playoffs. Scott Servais would be taking on a team that has not made the playoffs, has got the longest playoff drought in the sport, obviously, and one that lost its franchise second baseman to an 80-game suspension smack in the middle of the season. I mean, that to me, I think all remember, all voters for these awards are writers. Writers love narratives. It's a pretty good narrative. And I think that the way things have gone in baseball, where I think we are all much more accountable for our votes than we ever have been before because of the transparency in social media, I think Scott Servais has a better chance than maybe a lot might believe based on the quality of the job that he's done this year and the way the team is playing.
Well, John Morosi here. My final question for you, John. John of MLB Network, but going to be fun on the Fox broadcast Saturday, the national game of the week, and John will be in studio with us, and we'll get to see you here. You mentioned you covered the 2005 season. That was the rookie season of a flamethrower from Venezuela, a kid by the name of Felix Hernandez. Felix Hernandez in the 2005 year and the Felix Hernandez in the 2018, very different guy who's accomplished an awful, awful lot. But right now, John is really struggling. I'll be very curious. What do you expect to see and hear when you come to town and you get a little closer look inside this clubhouse and some time around Felix, a guy you covered as a rookie?
Well, Brock, I mean, to me, first of all, he has really taken seriously the mantle of being the face of the franchise for as long as he has been. And I think we've all, and any of us that have been lucky to see him over the years, have seen him grow up and what a great person he is for the community. I think first and foremost, I think Felix is trying as hard as he can to reinvent himself. And I don't know if this is truly the best way to describe it, but almost fake it till you make it from the standpoint of just figuring out his stuff and getting to that point and just trying to get out to the big league level. I know I've made this comparison before, But to me, I've always looked at him and Verlander in a very similar way. They arrived around the same time. I've had the honor of covering both of them for a long time and being around them at different times of their careers. And Verlander told me that 4 years ago, he thought his career was over. He thought he had a start in Pittsburgh where his fastball was 86, and he felt like his body was just not going to allow him to pitch anymore. He talked about crying in the tunnel in Pittsburgh that day when he felt like it was all ending. And so look at Justin Verlander now. He's won the World Series, and he's been as dominant as ever this year. So no two people are alike. They're obviously, I think Felix has dealt with, I think, probably more serious arm issues maybe than what Justin has. So I think that's, from that standpoint, it's not an apples-to-apples comparison. But it's still in there. And I think that it's a matter of the right voice, the right physical training, the right changes. Justin talked about having to really go down to the absolute bare bones of nutrition and physical training, getting back in touch with his body. I know Felix is trying all these things too. It's just a matter of the results. And I think the one thing that's sustaining him here is the team is staying in this race. They're doing more than that without him at his peak. And I think there is still something left in there, an adjustment to be made. And I'm going to be really curious to see where he is at when I can get up close to him and talk to him this week, because I still think there's something there for him. And the Mariners can also develop maybe some swing-type pitchers during the course of the season. Maybe they acquire somebody they can start a relief to help lessen the burden there, get him the time he needs to develop whatever that new Felix 3.0 or 4.0 is going to be. It's still in there, and the Mariners, at some point in time, they've been able to get by without him being at his peak so far, but at some point in time, they need him this year.
John, we're going to see the Mariners here once they get done with the Angels, two more against Anaheim, and then it's Boston, New York, and basically playing these two teams for quite some time. How good are they? They have the two best records in the league. Are they as good as their records indicate?
Well, here's what I'd say, Mike, on the case of the Yankees, and this goes back to an old Jim Lelandism, which is it's not who you play, it's when you play them. And the Yankees right now, they've got Montgomery on the DL, and Tanaka now probably going to miss a month. So the Mariners are going to get two series against the Yankees without having to face Tanaka either time. That's certainly going to help the Mariners. I mean, I think that the Yankees are going through a period of introspection about what their rotation is going to be like, and the Mariners can take advantage of that. I still think that their lineup is so good top to bottom. I mean, really, there is not a break in there. I think the Red Sox now, they're getting Mookie Betts back. I think right now, I know they're tied at the moment. I think Boston's a better team, 1-25. I think they're the more challenging team to play. And so, hey, if the Mariners, obviously a big win last night, they can win this series against the Angels, gives them some momentum going into playing Boston. So I think the Mariners, by the end of this stretch, they're going to know a lot more about themselves than they do right now. And really, again, this is going to be a good test for Felix. But really, all the pitching we talked about with the way they've been able to maybe go against the book and the way they built the staff, we're about to find out how sustainable and how workable this is going to be against October-type competition. It's great. This is, as it's been said, the season has a way of revealing strength of the week. This is a big two-week stretch for the Mariners. I think we're going to know a lot about just how good and how enduring this team is going to be when it's over.
That's awesome. John, always fun. Glad we're going to get a chance to see you in person and have you into the building on Friday. Fox Game of the Week on Saturday should be a blast. John Morosi, MLB Network. We'll talk soon, man.
Sounds great. I can't wait. I'm getting a little emotional, man, coming back to Seattle. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm really excited about this. I've had this date circled for a long time, and I'm excited to see you guys.
When's the last time you were here?
I was here. I was in Seattle last year.
Oh, okay.
For a couple days, but this is the first time I will actually be doing an actual TV game, so to speak.
I was worried it had been like 5 or 6 years. I'd say you won't even recognize it. They put up like 19 new buildings since you were here last. So
I've heard there's a company building a lot on South Lake Union. Is my information correct on that? Has that been happening?
Yeah, they're almost done. Yeah. They're all getting ready to pull out and move to HQ too. So don't worry about it. John, thank you. We'll talk to you soon.
There's
John Morosi of MLB Network, MLB.com, and he does some stuff with Fox as well. I've really enjoyed talking to John this year every couple of weeks, and I think you get a really good sense of the national perspective there. He's not quite the eternal pessimist that Jeff Passan is, and I really enjoy talking to Jeff also. They're both really smart baseball guys in very different ways.
Yep.
But I think you get a sense there as to how people are viewing the Mariners, and they're starting to creep into some of the conversation. They'd have to. They get the third best record in baseball behind Boston and New York. They're a half game up on Houston. They've got a 5.5 game lead on Anaheim right now. I mean, you know, it's theirs to blow, and I know they've done that at times in the past, but you know, it's theirs for the taking right now.
Yes, and you've got arguably one of the best power hitters, the best power hitter in baseball in the last 4 years. When you look at Nelson Cruz's numbers, you got a guy that's just got some juice and Energizer button just from a national story, and D. Gordon, whose pops played, who's been in Florida, who's been in L.A. He's got, you know, just some name recognition. This little Segura guy, they just can't quite figure out because all he does is hit. You know, Zunino hits some bombs. They got a little bit of juice. And by the way, I think I figured it out. I wrote down one of my little scribbles here. I don't think it is an East Coast bias anymore. I think some of that has dissipated. I really do. I think it is an East Coast lean. And maybe that's just semantics, but bias is like an so agenda driven. I think it is just a heavy lean to kind of what is popular, right? That is just what is easiest in a culture society that just always wants what's easy. Let me hit the easy button. I think it's just easy to have an East Coast lean because of the mega markets.
It's just a myopia.
And the generations they've been.
I mean, honestly, and I guess that's harder to say, East Coast myopia, but that's what it is. It's not that they're biased in favor of the East Coast or against the West Coast. They literally don't know what's happening on the West Coast. They've never bothered to look.
Yeah, Titus last night was trying to figure out. He's like, I thought the game started at 10. And I was like, oh, you must have. Did you look online? He's like, yeah, 10 start. Right. And he's like, they start a game at 10 o'clock on the East Coast. Like, the Mariners are on at 10 o'clock. Like, to him, he's in bed at 8, like a lot
of
kids.
But, of course, what does it say?
Titus is just out there running Google searches now? How old is this kid?
Oh, yeah, Kyle. He's all over it. You wouldn't believe what he looks for. The number of bobbleheads. He brought in the computer the other night. He's like, okay, just five, Dad. Just look at these five. Just tell me which of these five are your favorite bobbleheads. So, oh, no, he's searching all
of them. Get this kid on eBay.
The myopia starts even before Titus, even before them trying to watch a game at 10 o'clock. The fact that the listing says 10 p.m.
Yeah.
The game didn't start at 10 p.m. The game starts here at 7 o'clock, the way it's supposed to.
Correct.
But no, on the East Coast, it all starts with the way we view the world. I mean, it's like the idea of putting Europe in the center of the map.
Yes.
Like, I mean, the world does not function around everything they do. But if you're a writer and Boston and New York are good, who's going to win the manager of the year? Well, it's either going to be Alex Cora, the manager of the Red Sox, or Aaron Boone, the skipper of the Yankees.
Oh, and I think that's why Scott Servais said what he said last night. At least I heard it this way, and I kept writing this way, reading it this way. He wants this. Let's go. Bring it on. I want this competition so I get to show those markets what we got.
Me personally, our coaching staff, really looking forward to the next couple of weeks of baseball. We really believe in this team. Our guys believe in themselves. And, you know, we're going to face some good clubs. We're looking forward to it. It's going to be a lot of fun.
And why shouldn't he? His team is, you referenced the record there without Robbie Cano. There's a lot of guys that have picked it up. You heard Morosi right there. It's a sum of all of the parts. Mm-hmm. It's a collective. Right, they get in close games. Okay, fine, we're good. We've been there before. Right, we're 21-9 in one run game. So, you know, I can check that. I got the best closer in baseball. Period. End of story. He's got 24 saves now. So I got the best guy in. So if we feel like we can get a lead and just give him the ball at the end, we all feel great about it. And on any given night, I don't know who's going to go yard, but more than likely somebody is.
Somebody will.
Somebody will
figure this thing out.
Somebody in this, and then eventually, you know, I mean, if Felix gets hot here. If D. Gordon gets hot, if Haniger finds some rhythm again for another month and a half, or she kind of ebbs and flows.
I think the thing is, and this is why it may look a little bit different, is that Boston and New York are built like Houston. I mean, they are teams that are complete. And I think that's the difference. The nice thing what the Mariners have been able to do so far, and the Angels are not a complete team, don't put them in that list, is when they've been playing Tampa and Minnesota and Oakland, et cetera, those teams all have holes.
Yep.
Either the bottom of their lineup stinks, or they don't have enough in the middle of the lineup to really
or
scare you.
Or
you wait out the good starting pitcher and you get to the bullpen, or you beat up the starting pitcher early, and then the bullpen maybe shuts you down. But they're not complete teams.
Correct.
The Red Sox, Yankees, and Astros, and especially the Red Sox and Yankees right now, the Astros have some bullpen issues. They're complete teams.
Yes.
Their lineups look killer. They have really, really great talent at the top of those and middle of those lineups. They're deep enough to be able to not have just giant holes, and they can start and they can relieve.
Yep.
And trying to figure out where you're going to attack those teams can be a challenge. Now, here's the other side of it. At least at the beginning of the year, and I haven't gone back and looked, I should go check. The Red Sox and Yankees weren't playing anybody. I mean, the rest of the AL East kind of stinks. The Orioles are terrible. We've seen Tampa. The Mariners have taken six or seven from them. Toronto basically quit early. I mean, they haven't exactly been playing the world beaters either. So, you know, we'll get to find out whether or not the Mariners can try to take advantage of a few of those things, find the weak spots, and go to work at trying to beat them. Come away with a few wins, and you're all of a sudden you get the confidence. I really think the sky's the limit for what they can do here over the course of these next 2 weeks. But I get why Scott Servais thinks it's fun. We have a lot more to talk about next. Brock and Salk.
This is Brock and Salk.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Here are your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk.
All right, we got to answer the question jerk here in 15 minutes. Good chance to start sending in some questions. 710-710, powered by Coors Light. You know how it works. Should be fun to answer some questions today. Whatever you guys got, whatever you're thinking about, send us a text.
I think the three of us are all doing the same thing tonight, right? Are we all cooking halibut tonight?
I know I am.
I know you are. I know
Brock,
I am.
Brought back some serious halibut and salmon from Alaska yesterday.
Yes.
We didn't really get into your fishing stories.
No.
What can you tell us? I mean, we got a moment or two here. We can get back to some Mariner stuff. We get some calls here, et cetera. But give me just like a little bit of the vibe up in Sitka as you and Damon are up there fishing and competing.
Yeah. Well, it was interesting. I didn't really know. It was the most time Damon and I have spent together. I think we figured it out. In like, I don't know, 20 years, 25
years. Is that because
you've
been avoiding each other? Or
no.
Just a matter of circumstance?
It's just a matter of the craziness of life, Kyle. Yes.
I had the same conversation with my sister because she and I flew back. I flew through Denver on the way home from this funeral.
Yes.
And so my sister and I were on a plane together, sitting next to each other. It was the first time I think we'd been on a plane together since 1994 or 5.
Wow.
And like it had been, I promptly fell asleep, obviously, but it had been a while since we had been on.
Yeah, and I think 1995.
About the same time.
My freshman year with Damon. Spent a lot of time, obviously. He was a senior. I was redshirting. But I think this was the most, I know it was, for 3.5 straight days.
Okay.
And I had very low expectations. I had no idea. I wanted to get along. And,
very low expectations of Damon?
No, of just like,
that's
I didn't want to put any pressure on your brother? I did not want to put like any pressure on
Damon's
this time.
Damon's a pretty good guy.
Damon is a great guy.
It doesn't seem like you believe that.
Low expectations in just
what
the time.
With
you know
sibling
what?
Rivalry.
I am just done.
All right, so give me a story.
No, it was just tremendous.
That's not a story.
I would say he was very deferential. I was very surprised.
No wonder you think it went well.
Yeah, I thought it'd be like, you know, he's done these fishing trips up in San Juan's. This is San Juan Derby every year. So I thought it'd be like, oh, let me show you what I could do.
Right.
Right. And oh, let me show you what I could do. And no, he was just like, no, bro, you got it. You get that fish, man. You take that one. I don't want to mess that. You know, I just want fish. So he was super, super deferential.
Text message here. How'd Luke do on the trip?
You know what? Let's get to the Mariners.
It's just the texter.
Are you?
Texter just, from the 206 just wants to know how Luke was. Did Luke enjoy himself?
Luke was cheering on from afar. Yes.
Afar?
Yeah, Luke was busy. He got camps, recruiting.
He was obviously invited on the trip, right?
He
was obviously invited.
Of course he was.
He was? Not. Like you called him and invited him?
No,
texted him?
No.
Emailed him?
Oh,
I mean, you sent some communique, right?
It was great. The highlight of the trip is you're on the clock. You only have, you know, like at this minute, we've got to get in. We got to get to the dock. Got to get the fish processed. Got to get it to the process. Like, so you kind of work back from that. So we are off the water. The rods are up. The lines are up at like 3:08.
Okay.
And so, you know, 3 o'clock, 3:05. We had not had a bite in a couple hours on any kings. It's 3:07. Started to do my little baseball jab. Here, fish.
And
Damon's like, dude.
I love that.
Damon's like, dude, look at your rod. And my rod just went wham. And that's when I got the 28-pounder, and that's why I ate the heart. What? What are you shaking your head about?
Nothing. Damon was impressed.
Huh? Damon looked at the rod.
Like,
I got up. I yanked it. I put that hook right in the jawline. And, yeah, I don't know, about 5 minutes later, 28-pounder came up. Why are you not looking at
Brock,
me?
Brock, you are just we got to move on. You're just stepping in.
Sorry, we're going to have to move on.
What?
Don't worry about it. You go back and listen to the last minute or so later, and
yes.
you'll figure it out.
You go King or you go Chinook?
You turned away from me before I said that.
No, you turned away before I even said anything.
I can't wait to have a teenage boy, and you start to learn some of these things.
My goodness gracious. What's that,
Titus
Kyle?
Will fill you in someday.
Someday.
What do you say, Kyle?
I said you go native names, or do you go King salmon or Chinook salmon? You go silver, you go coho.
Yeah, mostly Kings. Yeah, mostly.
But you wouldn't call that a Chinook?
Silver. No. I mean, you call it a big king.
So they have king up there. Do they have
They got them
sockeye?
All, but right now it's just kind of heavy in the king season.
Now, how different is this from the Copper River stuff?
Fairly different because you're out in the open ocean.
Okay.
Yeah, in the Copper River, obviously those fish come back to the river, and they're magnificent. So, yeah, no, this was
they're certainly expensive enough in the store.
Yes, they are.
I saw King Copper River the other day for $60 a pound. What is that?
Get out of here. That can't be real, right? That can't be worth it.
You couldn't possibly. First of all, you're going to screw up the salmon cooking it anyway.
That was Metropolitan Market. You found that there?
It was not. It was Whole Foods. I'll have you know.
I would check.
Whole paycheck.
That's insane. How could you possibly be worth that?
I would challenge you to take that Sitka gold right there, that piece of salmon that I gave you yesterday,
and
whatever you do, do not overcook that. Don't overcook it, but don't so grossly undercook it.
Right.
Parts of it are cooked and some are not. Like, you know, you've got
so it's hard
thick,
to do it.
It is. Thick hunk of salmon.
Do you think that I should, what's the little...
Sous vide
it?
You have one of those?
I do.
I think you should.
Should I sous vide it and then throw it on the grill pan for a second or two after?
Yeah.
That'd maybe certainly be a good way to protect yourself from overcooking.
Both the salmon and the halibut?
I think that'd be a solid move.
I may sous vide.
Yes, please do.
I may sous vide that
right,
sucker tonight.
There we go. Five
I may sous vide it.
Fish and talk.
And you know what I'll be doing in the meantime? I'll be watching the Mariners. I'll be watching Mike Leake against TBA tonight or some other guy that they're going to bring up from AAA. I'll tell you,
you're going to watch, unlike maybe the unexpected nature sometimes of cooking salmon or halibut, you know, especially when you don't do it a lot, you're going to watch tonight with an expectation the Mariners are going to win.
Of course.
You're going to watch this game with an expectation the Mariners are going to win.
Should they just put Trout on first base in the first inning? Just whatever, man.
Yes, it worked for Barry Bonds
just
forever.
Stick
might
him
well
on first base. Just yeah. No, thank you.
No, the difference is Bonds didn't run.
That's true. And Trout 17 for 17 this year, stealing bags. But Mike Zunino shuts down the game.
He does
shut down the running game.
He does.
And Leak is athletic enough to kind of keep him close to the bag at first. Tomorrow with Marco, they absolutely should. Just stick him on first base and forget about it. Lefty on righty, a guy who really controls the running game well in Gonzalez. Just stick him on first base and don't even think about pitching.
I know
to
you
him.
Went on your rant 2 hours ago
about how much
hatred
I hate
of
them.
The Angels. So if Lydia's driving and she's listening to this right now, which she probably doesn't listen to.
I don't
to
care for them.
Okay. I know you don't. But is Mike Trout the best player of your generation?
Yes. Bonds is in his prime.
As you've watched baseball for the last, you know, roughly 35 years of your baseball watching.
Bonds, when he was roided out of his gourd and his head was 12 sizes bigger than it started. And I mean, you go back and look at what Bonds did in those seasons. It's not.
It was really stupid. But he also wasn't playing center field. He also wasn't stealing bases.
Yeah.
He also wasn't the complete player and doing all of those things. Mike Trout's on pace for well over 50 home runs this year. And I know that's not 70, and I know his on-base percentages and whatever Bonds was at, 460 one year, some ludicrous. What was
his on-base percentage?
Yeah.
609?
Oh, that's just dumb.
Brock.
What?
So stupid.
In 2004, his on-base percentage was 609.
That's more ridiculous than the price of copper.
What are you talking about?
Give me a break.
609. In that stretch, it was 515, 582, 529, 609.
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
I'm sorry. This is not even close.
All right. Well, he
now,
was
it's not
also,
legitimate.
Exactly.
But
he was such a cartoon character.
Brock.
Yes.
His OPS is those years from 01 through 04.
I love when you say my name that way.
Brock.
Yes.
1379, 1381, 1278, 1422 was his on-base plus slugging because he slugged 812. Mm. His slugging percentage was higher than most people's OPS.
Absurd.
Brock.
Yeah, absurd.
Brock.
Okay.
Don't even compare.
Brock. I heard the first Brock.
Do not even compare. During the stretch where he won those four straight MVPs, don't even compare. Nothing comes close. Okay. Nothing.
But obviously.
Home runs during that time, 73, 46, 45, 45. And the only reason those numbers in the 40s aren't higher is because they just walked him every single time.
Right.
He led the league in walks every single one of those years. Up to 232 walks in 04.
Okay,
save
for the juiced out of his mind, Barry Bonds. Is Mike Trout the greatest player you've watched in this generation? And is there
in
more,
this group, yes.
Yeah. Is there more that he feel, I don't know, man. These are always interesting conversations. Is there any responsibility for him to do a little more for the game? You said he's rather dull. He doesn't need to. He doesn't need to give you any more than what he gives.
I know, but it's annoying. It's just annoying that he's so dull.
Right. And I don't think it's because he doesn't have anything in the tank. I think there's a little bit more there he could give.
You think he's actually an interesting guy?
I don't
think so.
You don't think
even
so?
Even his Subway commercials, he's uninteresting. I think he's just an uninteresting person.
Well, he's
and
a baseball
most Subway
player.
Commercials are very interesting.
Yes.
And Mike Trout manages to take all the energy out.
Yeah, Nelson Cruz, it's not like he's super interesting in his interviews, but in those spots he did, were they the T-Mobile spots?
Ones?
Like, he's funny, and he's in the hot tub with you, and he's got a cool
charisma.
Personality. Bryce Harper's got a cool personality in those.
Charisma.
Somehow Mike Trout manages to have zero.
Yes.
And Tex Toy's calling for Lydia to get us back on track. Mom's gone! We're talking Sam!
All right. Sorry, Lydia. Sorry to the text machine. Do this. Just ask us some good questions, and we'll answer them coming up next. 710-710, powered by Coors Light. It's Brock and Salk at 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is Brock and Salk. Answer the question, jerk.
Keep asking questions. Come on, I'll answer them. Come on, I'm here. I'm going to answer your questions, dang it.
Answer my question! The question, jerk!
Well, don't just stand there. Answer the question, jerk!
All right, let's do this. Finish off another show by answering your questions. 710-710. Powered by Coors Light. Any question on any subject, you know it works. Turn that down a little. Loud. It's too loud.
Too loud, Kyle. Too loud.
It's too loud.
You're too loud,
Segura. All right, let's see what you guys have for us today, 710-710. Jerks, it's actually from yesterday. Could you tell me what's going on with my favorite former Seahawks, Stephen Hauschka? And what are the team's plans for kickers in the coming year? Well, he's still in Buffalo.
Yeah, he got paid in Buffalo, and he played tremendous. He had one of his best career years last year up in Buffalo.
There's going to be a battle, I think, for the Seahawks kicking spot. Jason Myers and Sebastian Janikowski. Yeah.
So Janikowski's been working through this hip issue, as I understand it. He's done some kicking on the side, but nothing really with the team.
I think
team.
They made him run for the first time in his life.
Seabass?
Yeah. Uh-huh. I think somebody told him to work out, and he was like, what do you mean work out? That's not what I do here.
Pop my hip. And the problem with Jason Myers is he looks like Blair Walsh. If you put number 7 on him, size-wise,
it's just like him.
He looks just like his body is built and everything else. But he's athletic. He had a good leg the day I watched him. He sure kicked good.
Next question.
Doesn't matter. The only person in special teams you're going to be focused on, Brock, two people.
Michael Dixon and John Ryan.
Michael Dixon and Shaquem Griffin.
There you go.
Yeah, John Ryan. I'm not going to be focused on him at all. I'm going to be watching Michael Dixon do whatever he wants. I'm going to watch Michael Dixon play quarterback with the ball with his foot.
I think it'll bring out the best in John Ryan. That'll be interesting to see. Oh,
last year certainly didn't, so that'd be good.
Yep.
Jerks, do you guys have any honeymoon location recommendations? Kyle, you went to Hawaii?
Yes, indeed.
Howdy.
Went on a cruise down the Mexican coast.
Right. Brock, you went to Hawaii.
Maui, yep.
I went to Nicaragua.
Yeah.
That was awesome. I can't recommend this because I haven't been there, but there's somebody in the office, our friend Michael, who just got back from mostly Argentina with a stop in Chile on the way there. And he was telling me about, I think it's Mendoza, the wine country in Argentina, showing me pictures of where he stayed. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That looked incredible. Yeah. So maybe that'd be a cool location for a honeymoon.
Yeah, give it a try.
I really enjoyed Nicaragua. Big Corn Island, man. Very quiet.
Mm.
We were alone on a beach in the Caribbean. Hard to beat.
Not bad.
Next question.
Maui's pretty good, too. Maui kind of does vacationing right.
Yeah.
Like, it's just the whole island is set up perfectly for it. Expensive.
Yeah. Are you still thinking about going up to Alaska, by the way?
At some point. It's not going to be this October.
You got to get up there.
I will. Heather and I really want to go.
Don't do it.
I know. We're not going to.
No.
Maybe next summer. We'd really like to get up there.
Next question.
Jerks, what does your back seat say about you as a person?
I'm a nice guy.
How does your back seat say that?
I don't know.
Brock, I think they mean your actual back seat.
Like your power source?
Like of your car, not your power source.
Yeah, I know. I got you. No, is it messy? Is it cluttered? Is it dirty? Is it disorganized or is it orderly?
Mine says that I have kids with,
car seats
in it.
Yep. How grimy does it get underneath the car seat?
It's not great.
Not too bad?
It's not too bad. Again, dude, the car, got my Traverse. I got the Redline. I got tons of space in there. I've been keeping it clean because I like it so much.
Big baller.
Big baller.
Next question.
Big baller. Got some other cars that are maybe a little messy.
Kyle, how many kids do you think you're going to have?
What is it? The bar's set by the Duggars at like 19?
Yeah.
20.
Go after it.
Phillip Rivers is better 10 or 11?
Yeah.
Speaking of the power source thing, Danny was getting mad at me last night. The moose came into the suite where we were.
Oh, really?
And I was sort of commenting on the way the moose was fitting into his uniform. Danny was like, what is wrong with the body image show?
That's too
You're
far,
judging
way
the moose?
Too far. Titus did ask me last night. He's like, do you think the moose person in there gets super sweaty?
Person? What are you talking about?
You think the moose gets sweaty doing all those backflips?
I don't think moose is
I don't think meese
sweat.
What?
Meese don't Mice? Sweat.
Meese.
Mason?
Moose.
Meese. Jerks, is Taylor Motter still in the organization? No. He
is Zipchinski?
Actually, no.
He's not gone. He's gone. He's gone, too.
He went to the Twins, I think.
Zipchinski got picked up?
Yeah, they need him.
No.
Motter.
Jerks, what is the office etiquette on other people using your coffee mug? Does that happen?
What?
I think the office etiquette is that doesn't happen.
Why would you do that?
That's not right.
kind of weird.
Plus, you should have one that says, like, world's number one dad or something so that everybody knows.
You could also keep it at your desk. Because right. There are times that, yeah, the coffee mugs become somewhat communal.
Not everybody has a desk, though, Brock. Why you got to...
Well, keep it in your backpack.
Area?
Keep it in your area. Keep it somewhere. Because if you put it in the communal area with all the other coffee mugs, you're running that risk. You don't know. Someone comes in from out of town. I go to Qatar or something down in Phoenix. There's no cups, but there's a bunch of mugs. How am I supposed to know if that's yours or not? I'd be careful.
They don't provide cups? Paper cups?
Well, we ran into that problem with plates over here because there's like four plates in the office. Right. So if you need to reheat something that needs a plate, you do that.
Next question.
Try to stay away from those plates, personally.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
You make like a pad of like six paper towels.
Yeah, I'd rather go.
You know what else, by the way, my fishing trip? I was really impressed with Damon. Not nearly the germaphobe. I was really worried. I mean, you're fishing. Blood and guts and all the, you know.
Worms?
Yeah. No worms. Just
kind of
just
herring.
You got herring. You got spoons. Captain Tom, the outdoor line, got about everything you could ever imagine.
Good. Worms are gross.
Yeah. No worms.
Not using worms is a plus.
You know
worms
what the
disgusting.
You know what the best couple baits, what the best bait is for halibut, though? Octopus. If you can find a little strand of some octopus, they go crazy for it.
That octopus you were eating.
Next question.
That was delicious.
My back seat says I don't have any friends.
Because it's empty?
I guess. No one ever uses it? Maybe. Yeah, if it's always empty, you probably don't have many friends or family. That's sad. Text message, Brock, how come no stories about Luke from your trip? Really rude.
Well, maybe next year Luke gets invited and Damon doesn't. Is that okay?
No. Seems like the three of you just can't hang out together. What's the deal with that?
I'd be trouble for sick.
Sick, Brock, I couldn't handle it.
You keep those worms in your mouth like Ed Orgeron.
Keep them warm.
Ugh.
I do what you gotta do this for your family.
Are you really gonna sous vide the halibut tonight?
I'm thinking about
Please do.
That's my plan. That is my plan as of now. Yep, I gotta look into that, how I wanna get it done tonight. All right, we gotta get out of here. What a fun day, man. It's really fun talking Mariners with you guys again. Mike Leake on the mound against TBA. I guess they're bringing somebody up from the minors. Whatever. Go get them, Mariners. Go win this series and then sweep it tomorrow morning. We'll be down there at Safeco tomorrow. Talk to Scott Service in the 9 o'clock hour. Until 7 o'clock, the Hey
Barnes.
See everybody.
This is the chopper!